We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ooh, hold up. Smell test. Go ahead. Sniff those pits. Now, your bits. Feet, toes, come on. Ugh. Could be fresher, right? It's all good. Old Spice Total Body Deodorant Spray is gentle enough to use all over your body, giving you 24/7 lasting freshness with daily use, from pits to toes and down below. So every smell test gets a... Shop for Old Spice Total Body Deodorant.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly interview show where top chess players, authors, content creators, and accomplished amateurs discuss their careers and share stories and chess improvement tips. Perpetual Chess is a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and we'd like to give special thanks to our presenting chess education sponsor, Chessable.com. For more information about the show, you can go to perpetualchesspod.com. But without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Chennai Chess Olympiad bonus edition of Perpetual Chess. I have to be honest, listeners, I wasn't even planning to do an Olympiad bonus pod, but I should have. For listeners who don't know, the Olympiad, of course, is basically the Olympics of chess. Every country that can sends a team. You get four players per team, and they line up, and it creates a lot of team spirit and rooting for your country and camaraderie amongst the participants. The Olympiad has such a rich historical legacy. It's always been one of my favorite tournaments, and this year I've been watching it a lot, and it's been so entertaining. But most of all, when I watch the interviews and stuff, everyone just looks so happy to be there. So I wanted to hear more about this tournament firsthand. So it wasn't easy to do so, but I managed to line up a couple of guests joining us from Chennai. First up is Grandmaster Axel Bachmann. He is the top player in Paraguay and a six-time chess Olympiad. So he shares some great perspective on how this Olympiad compares to others, what the conditions are like, what surprised him about it. And of course, he talks about how the Paraguay teams are doing in his own games in this Olympiad against Fabiano Caruana and Badur Japova, just to name a couple. And then I'm also joined by the famous Mr. Dodgy, secretly known as Michael Duke. Those of you on Twitter likely know Mr. Dodgy. He's got like 23,000 followers. Very amusing. Finger on the pulse of chess. He also works for Chessable, so he's there in a professional capacity, but able to take it all in and tell some fun stories. He's also coaching the team from Jersey, which features Lula Robs of Twitch/Twitter fame, among other participants, team members. So Dodgy, of course, is a chess fan, so it's fun to hear his perspective on the tournament as well. As for what's going on in the tournament, The tournament standings change so quickly, so I'm not going to spend too much time telling you all who's leading because I'm recording this late Thursday night. By the time you hear this, round 7 will likely be in full swing and it could change. So we'll have plenty of time to reflect on the results when the whirlwind of this event is over. And of course, some of you may even listen days or weeks later. But I do want to remark on the obviously great organization of the tournament that the players speak of. I've been watching a lot of clips and short interviews of the players on Chessbase India and Chess.com India, and highly recommend that curious listeners check out those channels. Often the videos are pretty short. Also, want to give a shout out to Levy Rosman, Gotham Chess's recaps. There's so many games and so much action each day, so it's nice that he shows you about 10 games in 30 minutes. And there's just so much interesting chess going on. So if you're a Chessable Pro member, be sure to check out Brian Tillis's recaps of all the tactics that go on. There's just so much. So, I mean, for posterity, I will briefly note that as this is recorded, Armenia is narrowly leading the U.S. They play today when you guys hear this, or, you know, will have already played. India leads the women's tournament. But the biggest tournament, the biggest news after 6 rounds is the breakout performance of GM Gukesh, 16 years of age and 6 out of 6 on board 1 in his first 6 rounds. He's beaten 2 IMs and 4 GMs, just amazing. And as Axel Bachmann and I talked about, another young phenom, Abdusatarov of Uzbekistan, has been crushing it, although he did finally lose a game to GM Hare Krishna after my interview with Axel was recorded. But the bottom line is a story that's come up often here on Perpetual Chess. Younger players are getting better faster than ever, and that is a trend which shows no signs of slowing down. But we'll have time to talk about the results when it's over, and I'm sure I will feature some interviews with Olympiad participants in the coming weeks and months. I will say I'm not going to be covering the Olympiad like right away when it's over. We've got some of those interviews already recorded. But in the meantime, I hope you guys enjoy hearing the perspective of what it's like to be there. When I watch and see the chess, that's the element that I want to hear. So I hope that you do too. So we'll get you to it in a minute. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Chessable and Aim Chess. Be sure to check out Brian Tillis's course on Chessable, Levon Aronian. When not competing in the Olympiad, just dropped a Chessable course, so be sure to check that out. And Aim Chess, of course, is a great way to work on your online game, get insights and drills based on the data that its algorithm collects. Use the code PERPETUAL30 if you decide to sub. So without further ado, let you get you to the interviews. First up, we have Grandmaster Axel Bachmann giving you the player's perspective, followed by the inimitable Mr. Dodgy. So, quick break, and then we'll get you to the interviews. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we will be back on Tuesday with a non-bonus Perpetual Chess. Take care and enjoy.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and 2 tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
And we are here, and I am joined by Grandmaster Axel Bachmann. Axel, of course, has been a top 100 player in the world with a peak rating of 2662. He is Paraguay's highest rated player. He's won many tournaments. This is his 6th chess Olympiad. He is also a chess trainer, teaching people who are good at chess as well as myself. He is a font of chess information, and he's got some amazing chess stories from his years on the professional circuit, but this is an Olympiad-focused episode. So we're going to talk Olympiad today, and then someday I hope to get Axel back to hear even more stories. But let's welcome Axel Bachmann. He is joining us from Chennai. It's Wednesday for him, Tuesday night for me. Good morning, Axel.
Morning, Ben. I'm very, very happy to be with you again here. And yeah, we're here in India. Things have been very, very very, very great, I have to say. You know, they are making a great, great effort to make everyone happy. And yeah, we will see how the final part of the Olympic goes.
Okay, because Axel, you know, I've heard a lot of concern coming into the Olympiad about like organizational issues, people having trouble getting visas. You know, Chennai, like the seaside pictures I've seen look beautiful, but you also hear some concerns about the economic conditions in India. But Axel, everything I've seen from people online has been effusive. People seem to be having a great time. Is this just all like a big conspiracy, or are things really going well?
No, I have to say, you know, people here, it's my first time in India, you know, so obviously I didn't know exactly what to expect. You know, I've been suffering Indians over the board. So, you know, right. Obviously that's a little bit different, but people here have been like very, very, very kind. You know, it's probably the most amazing return I received from people all over the place. It's not that, you know, only at the hotel, which is kind of expected. It's like when you walk on the street and you kind of ask someone about something, they're always trying their best to make you feel that you're, you know, more than welcome. So I have to say that, you know, I have to be honest as well. You know, my expectations were not very, very high in terms of, obviously, I understood they did not have a lot of time to organize, but they have been putting a lot of effort. Yeah.
That's good to hear. And where is where you're staying, Axel, in relation to the playing venue?
I mean, that's probably my only issue, or the only issue that our team has. We are very, very far from the playing venue. I understand they try to do their best, but we're kind of 1 hour away from the venue, which, you know, makes it a little bit tough, you know, because obviously when you go for the first round and you're all happy, you don't feel that way, you know, but after losing a long, you know, 5 hour match and you have to go back, and the traffic is quite heavy as well. And you know that you're not going to get there until, you know, an hour passes. So that's the only concern. I know a lot of people have been pretty lucky about it, but our situation is a little bit different. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So they've got people staying all over the place. And for you guys getting to and from the venue, are you taking cabs or shuttle buses, or what's happening?
No, they actually offer bus transportation. They have been very, very good at that, because they offer different times, and, you know, from the hotel and, you know, leaving after the round, the service has been pretty good. But, you know, it's a quite long ride. But yeah, I mean, I believe we are actually in the worst scenario in that sense. You know, I know people that have to go like 30-40 minutes, but no one like as long as 1 hour.
Okay, at least tell me, Axel, you guys aren't the only team there.
No, we're not. I mean, we share okay. that moment, you know, that magical moment.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that. And I heard an interview with Jan Gustafsson with Peter Svidler and Peter Lecoq. He was joining them. And he mentioned, I think he's staying somewhere closer, but he mentioned that he's discouraged from leaving basically a sequestered area within India. Like they say if you leave the premises, like they send basically handlers with them. It sounds like you're staying further away. So is there that dynamic in place for you too, Axel?
Yeah, I mean, they always ask us, because we actually like to walk around and get to know a little bit more than the hotel and the playing venue, right? So we have some sort of interaction with the Indian culture. And that's right. I mean, they normally ask whether you're leaving for, you know, 10 minutes for a walk or whatever. And there are a lot of police guys around the hotels, you know. But to be honest with you, I don't feel there's any sort of concern regarding security here. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, I have been here for a week or so, and I don't spend a lot of time at the street, but, you know, it really feels that, you know, no one is very, very unsafe here.
Yeah. I mean, I've never been to India either, but my guess would be maybe there could be like petty crime, like pickpocket sort of
stuff.
That's
right. But I mean, people here seem to be very, very peaceful, you know, no guns, no knives. I guess there might be, but, you know, it doesn't feel. I have been to a lot of places, and I have to say that this is very, very calm, you know, And, you know, although you're right, I mean, the economic, I mean, you see a lot of poverty. I'm not going to say, but I also come from a country that, you know, suffers that problem. So it's not a, you know, a big concern in terms of, oh, this is coming. You know, probably what recalled my attention the most is the cow walking, you know, so on the streets, right. You know, that is kind of unusual for me. But, you know, other than that, it's, I mean, it seems.
Do they walk on the sidewalk or in the street?
Like they are the bosses, you know, they can walk, they can walk sense. Whatever they want.
That makes sense. And Axel, as I mentioned at the top, this is your sixth Olympiad. You took a couple off. So I'm curious how it feels to be back and how this compares with your prior experiences in many different places, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I have been playing pretty much no tournaments at all. And although I love chess, I actually work with chess and I see chess every day. This Olympiad is a little bit different because although our team is pretty competitive and we really want to do our best, it's not the same as before. You know, I'm not saying that I was trying to become a world champion or so, but, you know, I had like different expectations before. It's more about, you know, helping the team and enjoying the moment. And obviously, I was very, very happy to be part of the team, and not only for the chess, you know, objective, but also because this is the kind of tournament where you can see a lot of friends from years and years, and it's kind of a unique opportunity to share that moment, you know. So it's pretty great. I mean, I'm only 32, but I had a lot of opportunities to represent my country. And in terms of, you know, that kind of tournament is my favorite as well. You know, you can play a lot of very, very good tournaments, like open, strong tournaments, but nothing like this, you know, where you can represent and you kind of team up with your, you know, with your colleagues in Paraguay. That's part of the reason we kind of always do well in this kind of Olympics, is because the team environment we have is great. So that makes a lot easier.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. And that's sort of the sense I get as a fan. I mean, it just, the atmosphere feels so lively. It feels so collegial, like everyone knows everyone. So that's kind of why I wanted to talk to a few people, just to get that sort of perspective. But I suppose, Axel, we should talk about the chess a little bit now. Now you mentioned, that, you know, your team's ambition, you didn't come in thinking we're going to win this, but in the second round, obviously you guys got to play the United States, and you played Fabiano Caruana and had black, and actually had the winning side of a draw. You drew the game, but you had a bit of a chance. So what was that experience like, and how different is it than a typical match when you're playing one of the higher seeded teams?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I have to be honest with you. We all can see that Fabi is not doing that great. You know, I could feel during that game, you know, I expected to suffer a lot more. I am completely honest. You know, you can feel when a player is not, you know, doing or performing their best. But still, you know, obviously when you face a team as the US, you kind of, you know, go to the match trying to do your best, not thinking about a result. But, you know, it sounds, you know, kind of unrealistic, but we kind of expected to put up a fight, you know, because we kind of assumed that they were coming, you know, kind of relaxed, knowing that it was a pretty weak team compared to theirs. And, you know, they suffered quite a bit. At some moment, you know, all the boards were, you know, kind of complicated, and we had Sam facing huge trouble in board number four. So it was, you know, a pretty intense moment, and you could feel that they were, you know, quite anxious or worried about this situation. So it has been, you know, quite a fun ride. Of course, six rounds remaining. We lost yesterday a match that was looking very, very good. At some point, you know, we had all four boards fighting very, very well. And, you know, it's part of it, you know. But what makes me feel very, very happy and proud is that, you know, I'm pretty sure no one wants to face us in terms of having an easy match, despite the rating difference. You know, they are kind of expecting a fight no matter what.
Yeah, that's good to hear. And obviously the match you guys just lost that you alluded to was against Georgia. So you played Grandmaster Badur Jabava.
Yeah.
You know, obviously he's not at his peak in terms of rating either, but very creative yeah. and dangerous player. I know the result didn't go the way you wanted, Axel, but what was that experience like?
No, it's fantastic. You know, playing Jabava with 25-85 is obviously kind of unfortunate because, you know, when he's at his peak, he can be easily a 2700, right? And especially in the Olympiads, I remember an Olympiad in 2016 where he won a gold medal at board number one, you know. So
I remember that.
He performs
yeah.
very, very well in this team events. I mean, Georgia in general. So we knew it was a very, very tough match. They are not as high rated as it seems. But, you know, we really had, you know, you look at the result and you might say, no, this guy's crazy, right? We lost 3.5 against a half, but we really had some really good chances. I mean, my game against Jabava was very, very tense. You know, we were close to the time travel and I decided to take a very, very risky decision of, you know, just opening up. And, you know, it could go either way. But, you know, regarding the team situation, we needed to risk a little bit more because we lost a game on board number three that wasn't expected to happen. And, you know, that's the magic of team events, because a lot of decisions that you might not come up with in a regular event happen in this kind of events. And that's I really like it, though.
So basically, you're blaming your teammates.
Yeah, obviously, I told the guy. You know, no, of course not. I mean, he took a risky decision. He had the chance to go for a draw, and a lot of the times it goes either way. You know, he can take a risk and win, but this time it didn't work. I mean, to be honest with you, I would have, you know, if I were him, I would probably do the same. So, I mean, that's also part of it. You know, that kind of situations can create some sort of problem a lot of the times. But since we have been playing for a few Olympiads and we're, you know, confident with each other, there's nothing to be said about that. You know, it's just words of encouragement and, you know, it didn't go the way we wanted, but, you know, next time we will be there.
Yeah, that's a great attitude. And anyone here in the U.S. who has played in the amateur team events, or, you know, anyone in Europe who's played in any sort of league, like, obviously we're on a much smaller stage, but you still feel that team dynamic, you know?
That's exactly. I mean, this applies for every single team event, you know, because, I mean, obviously you're playing your own game, that doesn't change, but a lot of decisions, whether you're going to go for a risky decision or not, it kind of depends. And it's very, very important to feel the support of your teammates, you know, because a lot of the times, imagine you take that risky decision, it goes wrong and people get mad at you. I mean, it's the worst situation possible, because next time you will feel less confident about your decision making. And obviously that's not good at all.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Axel, as we record this, it's after round five. And, you know, for us fans looking from the outside, I'd say the two biggest stories to my mind are both more individual than team, although the teams are doing just as well too. They are young phenoms Gukesh and Abdusatarov, both 5-0. I'm curious. I know that normally, in addition to obviously being a top 100 player and great trainer, you're a chess fan. You're always keeping track of what's happening. You're always playing through games, as you wrote about in the intro to Chess Structure. Do you still, like, are you still able to do that at a tournament like this, or is there just too much going on?
You know, it sounds a little bit crazy, but the first thing I do, or actually the second, now that I'm a dad, the first thing is talking with my wife and my son. But the second thing I do after I get back to the room after that 1 hour trip is get to my cell phone and look at the games.
That's great.
You know, yeah. Obviously, when you're at the room, you try to keep track of some of them. But, you know, it's kind of a long walk and you want to be around your match as well. So it's not that easy. Obviously, when we played against the U.S., it was fantastic because we were at that part of the room. But it's hard to return there. You know, I'm pretty sure it won't happen, or I mean, if it happens, that will be great. But, you know, that's, I'm keeping track, of course. You know, the, to be honest, I'm not saying it's not a surprise, but Gukesh has been performing very, very well. And, you know, Abdusattarov is just a monster. I mean, those two guys, I won't be surprised if they are, you know, in the top leagues in a year or so. You know, if they are not there, it's not because they are not good enough. It's more about, you know, the chances to play against this kind of people.
Yeah, it's so impressive.
Yeah,
the young generation.
At this point, I mean, it's hard to say because they are very, very young. But India, too, seems to be one of the main candidates, you know, because I don't see a weak spot in that team. You know, it's maybe their rating is not as high, but they are all performing, and it seems like they are enjoying the support of their crowd. You know, a lot of the times it might be an issue to play in your country because you kind of, and here in India, they are kind of passionate about it, you know, because you can feel the crowd being after them. And, you know, obviously it really depends on your personality, because a lot of people kind of overperform when that happens, but a lot of people kind of suffer that pressure, right? Because when it goes wrong, it's not the same, and you kind of feel disappointed for not only for yourself, but for the people that is kind of after you.
Yeah. Magnus himself, even I think it was after round one or round two, was saying India two he considered more dangerous than India one, and they're both doing great.
Yeah.
But yeah, no one wants to play the kids.
No one. I mean, it's pretty clear. And they are 5-0. I mean, obviously everything can happen. And I still believe that, you know, despite the fact that it doesn't seem like the US is in their top shape, they're still the heavy favorites, you know?
Okay.
I mean, they're just too good. You know? Even in a bad day.
Okay, that's well, time will tell. It will be interesting to see. So Axel, I don't want to keep you too long, but do you have any other sort of big observations you would share, like anything that someone watching at home might not appreciate about the tournament that you being there do, in terms of like the conditions or the atmosphere especially?
I mean, I have to say that obviously the culture is different. I mean, whenever you come to a country like this, or any country that is slightly different or different than your country, you have to come up with an open mind kind of, you know, thing, because people act different, and that doesn't feel is wrong or bad, but it's just different, you know. And the food part is different, you know. In my opinion, obviously food has been great, but for some people it might be a little bit different. I kind of like cows, but not walking on the street, you know, so it's like a different thing. But still, you know, they are making their best effort to make you feel that, you know, you feel welcome, and you know, that every single desire you have will be fulfilled. Obviously, there are always things to improve, but the fact that they only had a few months to organize all this makes things even more amazing, you know, because obviously if you organize this kind of event, and if you ask me, if they organized and took 2 years to do this, it would still be a good one. You know, obviously the only thing that I would improve is the distance that we have to go through to the playing venue, because 1 hour, you know, it doesn't feel that much, but whenever you are, it's a very, very tense moment before the game. And it's hard, you know, because it's 1 hour going, 1 hour coming back, and some people are 5 minutes away, you know. So it's not the most,
it's equitable.
It's not so fair, you know. If someone can walk to the playing venue and someone has to go for a 1 hour drive, it's a little bit different. But obviously, I kind of understand that, and you know, there, and it's good that you always have some space for improvement, you know. I mean, it's not perfect, but things have been going very, very great, and I really appreciate the effort of every single Indian, every single person behind the organization. FIDE has been doing quite great, you know, and you know, when there are things to complain about, we always do, but when things are done correctly, we have to say also.
Yeah, shout out to FIDE and the organizers. Well said. And Axel, I'm sorry, I did think of one more question
for
I wanted to ask you. Like when I was checking your pairing and saw that you played Georgia, obviously I've been rooting for you. I was curious, when do you know, when if ever do you know like what individual you'll play? Is there like, do you have to post a lineup at a certain point? Do you just show up and see who you play?
No. It's you have team captains, right? Every single team has one. And normally what happens is you know about the pairing in the night, after the round, around 10 p.m. or so. So you know the country then, right? 10 a.m. in the morning, rounds here start at 3 p.m., right? Uh-huh. 10 a.m. in the morning, pairings are up with the team components. And that being said, the captains have to send between 10 p.m. and 10 a.m. The lineup. If they don't send it, that is taken as the, you know, the regular team plays the first four boards.
Okay.
So you have, you know, you probably kind of imagine, because a lot of the times, once you look at how the team is performing and you see if someone loses, you kind of assume that guy is resting, right? Or for instance, in my case, whenever you're playing on the first board, it's a lot easier because I know Jovava is never resting, right? So, right. And you kind of assume, for instance, when we played the U.S., I knew Fabi didn't play the first round, so it was kind of, you know, natural to see him playing on the second round, you know, and also Levon drew his game, so it's kind of natural for him to drop out of the team and come back later on, you know, so it's, you know, you kind of assume, of course, a lot of the times it might be it might change a little bit, but in general, you already prepare a little bit, and obviously you do the concrete preparation after, you know, 10 a.m. for sure.
Okay. And then are you working with your team as well with the prep?
Yeah. I mean, we normally discuss a little bit the team strategy the most. Obviously, everyone knows that, you know, if I need some help, I ask someone, or if someone else needs some help. And we also have the ladies with us with, you know, and the female team of Paraguay have been doing very, very well. You know, they have been doing great, great, great. Even like a lot better than us. So
that's awesome.
We are very, very happy, and it's a very, very young team, you know, so we kind of try to support each other. Of course, during the night, we normally talk about a little bit about the strategy. It's not like you play for a draw or so, but we kind of analyze whether they're performing their best or if there's any like weak spot in terms of not having a good tournament. So we kind of focus more on that rather than specific preparation, because it's hard to, I would say that obviously there are always suggestions or recommendations, but although we are friends, we still kind of compete with each other all the time. So it makes it a little bit difficult to take part of his preparation or so, you know what I mean? So although I want to help them out and I know they want to help me out, it's more about a psychological support rather than a tactical support.
Gotcha.
In sort of way.
Okay. Well, Axel, already just from talking to you, I feel like there's so many little nuances that I have better appreciation for, both from the sort of preparation angle and the like what it's actually like to be there angle. So I know I know it's early there and you got more important things to do, but thanks a lot for hopping on. Really appreciate it.
No, thank you, Ben. Thank you for having me. And of course, feel free to get in touch if you need any sort of, you know, very, very important news from Chennai here.
Excellent. All right. There you have it. Good luck, Axel, and good luck to Team Paraguay, men and women.
Thank you.
And we are here with an internet celebrity, folks. He has some 23,000 Twitter followers. So those of you on Chess Twitter know well who Mr. Dodgy is. For those of you who don't, in real life, he's secretly known as Michael Duke. He works for Chessable. He's a strong player, often rated around 2,400 blitz online. He's known for his witty and entertaining and trenchant observations on Twitter, has his finger on the pulse of chess, and somehow talked his way into heading to Chennai. So with that in mind, he's also their coaching, we should say, the Jersey women's team. So he can give lots of perspectives about what it's like there. Let's welcome the famous Mr. Dodgy.
Thank you very much, Ben. I'm really glad to be here, and that's the best intro I've ever had.
Wow. Well, you may be a bit biased there, but
yeah,
anyway,
sure.
I am quite happy to have you. It's overdue, but I'm excited that you can give so many perspectives, because I wasn't really planning on doing a Chennai bonus podcast, but then as I'm watching it here far, far away in New Jersey, not Jersey, I just remembered it's the most amazing tournament ever. It is so much fun. I feel like every player, when they interview them, is grinning ear to ear. You know, the seaside pictures of Chennai look beautiful. So I wanted to hear from a couple people, and who better to hear from than someone like you, who is, you know, obviously players give a great perspective, but you have a bit more time to sort of soak it all in. So how has it compared to your expectations, Michael, aka Mr. Dodgy?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I mean, firstly, it was a little bit disappointing that New Jersey weren't able to send a team this year. I was really hoping to see them, but
we start with the Twitter inside jokes right from the beginning. I'm disappointed, although I still wouldn't have made the team. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, the entire experience for me has been fantastic. I mean, right from, like, it was a super long journey. I mean, my own journey was longer because I had to pick up a visa after the first flight, which was, you know, pretty exciting. So I got my visa without about 4 hours to spare. I was flying for, well, I mean, my total journey to get here was just under 24 hours. And then, But I arrived at like 9 a.m. So I didn't want to sleep that day. So I just stayed up until nighttime. And then once I'd done that, I was like synced up. There was no jet lag. But right from when we landed in the airport here, it was just fantastic. There was almost as many passport checks for chess players as there was for everyone else combined. They were just zooming all of the chess players through all the passport checks, all the visa checks, all the security checks to get out of the airport. There was tons of volunteers waiting around. And then the drive from like Chennai Airport to where the venue is, where we stayed at the beginning, the entire length of that, it's mostly highway of about 50 kilometers, and the entire highway on and off is covered with like chess artwork. It's like
amazing.
You've probably seen pictures of it, but like you can't imagine like how long that goes on for. A whole 50 kilometers of like every, you know, few hundred meters or so, there's another piece of chess artwork. It's just incredible.
That's incredible. And is it true that there was a separate line for chess players coming through customs?
Yeah, there was five. Or four or five, I don't know exactly. But yeah, they were just like dragging all of the chess players out of the queue. And like, no, you don't have to wait too long. So that was, yeah.
That's incredible.
It was good.
Yeah, and I heard that it's not actually in Chennai, the city. It's like basically outside of the city. Is that right?
Yeah, there's a small kind of beach resort, beach town place, about 50 kilometers from Chennai. And that's where the actual playing venue is. Most of the hotels are around in the surrounding area of about a 10 to 15 minute drive. But some of the players are actually staying in Chennai. So it's a pretty long drive every day. Like they're having to travel for up to an hour to get to the playing venue.
Yeah.
Which is kind
of... Yeah, listeners will have already heard an interview with Grandmaster Axel Bachmann. And he's one of the unchosen ones who, yeah, he was very... very positive about the organization overall, but yeah, he has a long bus ride for each round.
Yeah, and I mean, after the rounds, the buses are going pretty regularly. Like, people are not having to wait around too long. But it's a lot of travel time, and the other unfortunate side is that, like, people, it's much harder to socialize because those hotels are, like, super far away from anyone else, so they're not seeing too many people. And there's a lot of kind of local police keeping an eye on everybody, and they've been quite reluctant for people to actually leave the hotels. I know Jan Gustafsson he's tried twice, I think, to escape from the hotel, and they're like, no, not safe enough for you.
That's funny. Yeah, because I had caught Jan's interview on Chess 24 where he mentioned at least one of those failed escape attempts. So when I asked Axel Bachmann about it, he was saying, like, since he's out farther away, he and the Paraguay team are able to escape. And what about you? I understand, Dodgy, that you've been at a few different hotels already.
Yeah, I'm with the Chessable team. So we are not so restricted by the FIDE rules of which hotel to stay at. So for the first couple of nights, we stayed actually at the venue before the tournament began. And then obviously that was fully booked up for mostly delegates, I think. I don't think there's any players at the venue. So we moved to another beach resort just about 10 minutes away from the venue. And that was a nice little spot, but the Wi-Fi was just really, really bad. And, you know, we're an online company. We work remotely, mostly at Chessable, so it was impossible for us to work. But we managed to move to another one, and this has been pretty fantastic so far. So I have no complaints about this hotel.
You're really committed to the bit that you're doing some work while you're there, huh?
Yeah, like I have to pretend, but it's getting harder right. every day. Like at the Chessable booth, we've got a booth in the Expo Center at the Olympiad. And at the beginning, like we were giving out t-shirts and gift bags and all this stuff, but all the t-shirts are gone now. We still have some gift bags left, but it's hard to even pretend I'm spending the day giving out t-shirts when we don't have any left. So
right. Well, I mean, it's awesome. And by the way, I hope I can out you, Dodgy, as the producer of the Indispensable Chicken Chess Club. Is that allowed, or am I going to have to edit this out?
You can leave it in if you want. I don't know if I'll get too much blame for some of our audio problems. I mean, some of them are probably mine for not yelling at people too much. But also, we've had some bad luck with Peter Heine-Nielsen's ever-growing collection of microphones because he keeps losing them or leaving them behind in places. So he's bought so many microphones now at this point that I suggested he bring them all to Chennai, and he just sets up a stall at the Olympiad, you know, like selling microphones for streamers, and maybe he can make some money back. But yeah, that's what
I'd be doing. Yeah, I like it. I like it. That's a good idea. So paying for his own flight, you know, paying for his own flight for the FIDE vice presidential candidacy and paying for his own mics. Just the dedication is staggering. But bringing it back to the Olympiad, now, what I was getting at with the Chicken Chess Club is obviously you in a work capacity, get to talk to a lot of strong players. You know, you know Jan and Peter and Laurent quite well, and obviously Peter's fiddler. You've been in his chat for years. But I'm sure, have you had any firsthand encounters with other famous chess players that have, you know, that are quite memorable?
I did have a very special one at the Bermuda party. Like, and this was even by, you know, like I've been incredibly fortunate with like the people that I get to talk to, and, you know, like, and basically I get to talk to people that I've idolized for quite a long time. And they're just genuinely some of the best people. But at the Bermuda party, I did get asked for a selfie by one of the players, and it was,
that's excellent.
And it was by Judit Polgár.
Wow. So, that is amazing.
So yeah, her asking me for a selfie, it was, yeah, that's a highlight for me.
that's incredible. Did she post it? I don't think I caught it online.
No, I don't think she's posted yet. Maybe it wasn't a great selfie, but you know, I know it happened. Well, no one will believe me. It's fine.
If it finds the light of day, we're putting it on the Perpetual Chess webpage for this episode. So yeah, that's amazing. And obviously we know that in addition to being a, you know, a fan of the personalities, you are a hardcore serious chess fan, know your chess inside and out. And I asked Axel, because Axel is actually a serious chess fan as well, in addition to being a grandmaster, like, is he able to follow what's going on? And I'm also curious with you, are you following, like, you know, there's this guy Gukesh who's won a few games that a lot of people are talking about. You know, are you following all of these storylines?
Yeah, for sure. I've been following things. I have to be honest. I saw when I'm in the Chessable booth, I, like, one of the things I've been doing is keeping an eye on the games. So one of the players on a rest day came through one day and he says, "Oh, how are all the games going?" And he looked at my phone and he realized that I was only really paying attention to the Jersey women's team. I wasn't really following like Magnus and Ish and the Indian kids. That's been my main focus, but no. One of the things that we have been doing is we've been doing a lot of filming with Chessable, and the visually one of the most compelling things that we've managed to record is the reaction when any of the Indian players, but especially the juniors, when they finish their games and they just get completely mobbed as they leave the playing hall. And we've been trying to catch that different days and different players. But yeah, like, we're keeping an eye on Gukesh's game. When he comes out, there's just a swarm of people. There's just like hundreds of people around him asking for autographs, interviews, selfies, just taking pictures. There's all these TV cameras. So that's been super cool.
That's amazing. So do you feel like the chess fandom culture is different in India than in other countries?
It's definitely different from where I live.
From Sweden? Okay, yeah. We can check that off.
Yeah, I mean, I've been asked for so many selfies here and so many... I've sent so many boards.
Okay, but you're Mr. Dodgy.
Yeah, but I don't get that in Sweden.
That's true. Although, do you wear the Dodgy superhero outfit when you go to the grocery store in Sweden? For listeners, he's got like... I have a Mr. Dodgy t-shirt. You know, those are known to be like available, but like the Mr. Dodgy belt pouch is amazing. I got to get one.
Yeah. They were fun getting everything made, but no, I don't wear that at home. So maybe I should, but I do feel like this kind of reaction wouldn't happen anywhere else. Like, I think the candidates was really big in Madrid, but I don't think it was on the scale of this. Like, they're still getting thousands of spectators coming to the venue every day. And the reality is, like, we're kind of in the middle of the tournament now. So, like, it's not a life or death situation. You know, we're kind of in the... There's usually a bit of a lull in the middle of tournaments in terms of excitement because, you know, everyone's excited at the start, everything kicks off, and then at the end, you know, we find out who wins. But this should be the quiet spot, and it's... So far, it's really been not. There's been tons of visitors every day, and I think it'll be incredibly busy for the last couple of days, and they might have to start sneaking players in through different entrances because it's going to be hard for them to get into the play hall.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched a few like Chess Base India, like they just post these like 1 minute videos of like Magnus before the game, you know, stuff like that. And yeah, it's amazing to see sort of how many cameras are trained on the players. And they had another cool video of a drone of the playing hall. Mm-hmm. Now, apparently there's, I mean, you would be able to say this better than I, but there's like a small playing hall for the top boards and then a massive one for everyone else. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I think roughly the top 25 or 27 or 8 matches are in the top playing hall number 1. And then the rest of them are in playing hall number 2. So it's definitely bigger in playing hall number 2. But I noticed that playing hall number 2 has a lot more entrances. So, like, getting into that one is less hassle. The players don't have to queue.
Hopefully it's not too hard for chess players to sneak in their pocket phones so that if they reach a tough position, they can check the engine.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, it was a little bit lax for the first day or maybe 2 days. I don't think there was any specific incidents, but... I think things could have been a bit stricter, but then they did like tighten things up immensely.
Okay, good.
They're not letting people in with phones like an hour before the game now. Just in case, like they hide a phone, I guess.
That's clever. Yeah, sorry, yeah. I'm spending minutes thinking of like a mob movie where they hide a gun in the bathroom. It might have actually...
Yeah, it's The Godfather, isn't it?
This is The Godfather, yeah. Okay. Yeah, hide the phone in the bathroom, Rousis / Godfather style.
Yeah. Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
That wasn't worth the 30-second pause. But so Dodgy, we got to get to the big story. You know, longtime chess fans will know that the Bermuda party in the Olympiad is the stuff of legend. You know, I've mentioned before that obviously the Olympiad, it's so rare that you have such a high percentage of, say, the top 1,000 players in the world. It's got to be over 90%. It's also rare that the male and female ratio is relatively in balance. And then there's a rest day and they have a party. So, you know, probably the best stories never get told. But what was your experience like at the Bermuda party?
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good night. They put on some entertainment with us with some fashion shows and stuff. And then they had a nightclub inside. There was a lot of alcohol consumed, for sure. I mean, I mostly stuck to beer. But they, like, definitely the chess players drunk all of the beer.
And is it open bar or no?
Yeah, it was an open bar and they ran out of beer like 3 hours before the end. It was...
Okay.
They still had other alcohol, but yeah.
That's a recipe for disaster on its own right there.
Yeah. And they were just like, no beer. And then they just hand you like a mystery drink. And yeah.
Wow.
So that was a choice. I didn't see anything too crazy happening. There was definitely some people who were They had a lot to drink, and maybe it wasn't people you would think of. People kind of high up in FIDE and some super strong grandmasters were a little bit worse for wear. But overall, it was a good night. I went with the Chessable guys. I think four of us ended up going in the end, and we all had a good time.
Okay. Glad to hear it. A nice, family-friendly rendition of of the Bermuda party. And last thing, you did allude to being the coach of the Jersey team. Shout out to Tallulah Roberts. She was actually going to be a third segment on this podcast, but she's got to play, and they've had some issues with nothing too serious, but had some scheduling issues. So I'm going to interview her later. But what is the experience like? And for listeners who don't know, that's Lula Robs on Twitch and Twitter. She's built a huge online following, and amazing that she's already in the Olympiad. She's been playing chess for less than 2 years. So shout out to Lula. But what's the coaching experience like, Mr. Dodgy?
The coaching experience for me has been fantastic. I don't know if the girls would say the same thing, but they seem pretty happy so far. So we worked together for about 6 weeks before the Olympiad. And from kind of Chessable's point of view, we thought this is the first time Jersey have ever been able to send a women's team, because it's quite a small place. They don't have a lot of people. So they managed to put together a women's team for the first time. And from our point of view, we just thought this is a really nice story. You know, like them getting to send their team for the first time, and we wanted to help them as much as possible. We want, help them to put in a good performance. So I did about 6 weeks of coaching with them. We did like about roughly 3 hours a week, and then I played training games with them on top of that. And we gave them a bunch of Chessable courses. So they were going through like The Art of the Attack, 109 Games You Must Know, and some opening courses, which I won't reveal yet in case their opponents can prepare. But they did a lot. So they're big fans of Simon Williams, put it that way. So.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. So getting here has been... coaching them in Chennai was a bit more of a challenge, because it's about a 1 hour drive from me to them, and then we have to go 1 hour back to the venue. So the first couple of days it was hard for me to get there. But then since then, I think I've only missed one day. I've been going up there in a cab every morning. We sit down for a couple of hours. We're not focusing on like specific preparation at the moment, but mostly just trying to work out what kind of positions we're going to get, what the plan should be, how we feel. And since I've been able to get up there, like I think the results have improved. The first couple of days were rough for sure. Like we lost the first two matches, which was expected. That was like, I long before the tournament started, I said like probably the first two matches are going to be a wash. Like we've just played much stronger teams. But then the third match we did play a team that I thought we had a good chance against, and we lost that one as well. But since then we've won and we've drawn one match each. And everyone's won a game as well, which was nice. I mean, I wasn't too worried about that, to be honest. I was pretty confident that all of them would win at least one or two games. But our youngest player, Daisy, she won. There was two of them won, I think, in round four, Daisy and Rachel, but Daisy managed to finish first. So she's only 14 years old, and she'll forever have the record of being the first woman to win an Olympiad game for Jersey. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good to hear. Yeah, and as you say, small country, population of like 100,000. So, I mean, it's great that you guys were able to help get a team there. Yeah, and sounds like an interesting experience all around. Now, what do you mean by like, it's like the prep isn't so targeted. So you mean you're talking about opening positions, but not necessarily like... structures but not lines, or talking about the player tendencies, or are we already revealing too much,
I don't think we're revealing too much. So like a lot of the players that we're going up against, they don't have a huge amount of games in the database, so targeted preparation has not been super easy to kind of get on the board. So like when there's the opportunity to prepare as deeply as we can, then we've done that. But a lot of the time we're just kind of looking at like how they play. You know, is this someone who doesn't like sharp positions? Is this someone who doesn't like end games? Like, how did they lose the previous games? Was it from a blunder, or were they just, they played a good game and they were just unfortunate to come up against someone who was just far stronger than them? And I think so far we've kind of judged it pretty well. I think Lula's last two games in particular, because she did have a rough start. We played a 1550 rated player who was a little bit higher than Lula, and Lula had the black pieces. So we decided that like she was someone that we could target even with black, and if we create some imbalances and create a little bit of a mess, then it's worth taking the risk, because we felt she would make mistakes. And that's how it paid off, and she ended up winning the game. And then in the last game before the rest day, she played someone a little bit lower rated, but she was super solid. And looking at her games, we decided that she was just not someone that you should take big risks against, because she would likely win, and the game just was very solid. It was an exchange French, and she just pretty much played for a draw. So we got a draw in that one. And then today's game, we'll see what happens, but I'm pretty optimistic about the next one.
Okay, and are you heading over there to coach?
Yeah.
Say our goodbye momentarily?
Yeah, I'm going to head up there in about an hour, and we'll get started on today's games. But yeah, I'm reasonably optimistic about today's match. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, I'm hoping this will be a good day.
Okay, excellent. Well, so many results to track. And yeah, we appreciate your touching on so many subjects. I mean, obviously, Judah asking you for a selfie, that's a tough highlight to top. But I have to ask, Aji, before we let you go, are there any other like standout stories that the Perpetual Chess listeners should know here at slightly past the midway point?
I haven't talked to Magnus yet. I briefly said hi to him at the Bermuda party, but he was really being swarmed by people, so I didn't want to bother him too much.
Yeah, that must be nuts. Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird. I said hi to Anish, and I mean, for me, mostly it's been not so much highlights, it's just been day after day after day. I've got to meet people that I've kind of known online for a long time or kind of worked with, and then I've actually got to meet them in person. That's been pretty cool. So guys like Bada Jabava or Erwin Lamy or Pepe Cuenca and all these different people that I've interacted with online, like every day it's someone new, and everyone's kind of coming back to the Chessable booth to say hi. I saw Eugene Torrey as well at the Chessable booth.
Legend.
Which I thought was like super cool.
He's someone I've wanted to interview forever, but he's one of these, like the older guys are often offline, so they're a little harder to track down.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's the captain of the Philippine team this year. But yeah, like you just turn around in the big expo center, and you can definitely see at least one grandmaster, and then sometimes you can see like an absolute legend of the game like him. So yeah, that was pretty cool as well.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you for the perspective. Yeah, it makes me want to be there all the more. But much appreciated, Michael / Mr. Dodgy. I don't have to tell listeners to follow you on Twitter and check out the Chicken Chess Club. Any other? And of course, someday we're hoping for the Mr. Dodgy Invitational number 3. But any other closing notes listeners should be aware of?
Yeah, check out the Chicken Chess Club podcast. We're going to record a new episode tonight. Peter Heine-Nielsen's made it to Chennai, so we're gonna get another episode in. I think everyone's going to have a lot to talk about, because Jan and Laurent have been here for a week now, and I think they've enjoyed themselves. So it should be. Hopefully, the next one will be a good one.
Yeah, I reckon it will be. I better get this out before, because I know I'd be listening to that first. All right, so we'll let you go on that note, Michael. Thank you very much. And just take a lot of notes, because next time we chat, I want to hear about the second half of this tournament.
Okay.
But thanks again.
Awesome. Okay, thank you very much for having me, Ben. Bye.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. Big shout out to my producer, Matthew Passy. I'd also like to thank the Blue Wire Podcast Network, with whom we are proud to be affiliated. Be sure to follow us on social media, Beneficial1 on Twitter, at Perpetual Chess on Instagram, or you can join the Perpetual Chess Facebook group. You can email me, ben@perpetualchesspod.com. And of course, last but not least, I'd like to give Major thanks to the Perpetual Chess Patreon and PayPal supporters. Those who choose to join that community based on their level of support can do things like submit questions for guests of the show, have access to live Zoom Q&A lectures with grandmasters who often have appeared on the show, going over chess games, answering questions, stuff like that. And you can even get access to ad-free Perpetual Chess if that's your preference. So, but most of all, thanks to everyone for listening, and we will catch you all on the next episode.
Podcast Network.